Welcome to Good Dogs. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host Carol Borden, who founded and runs Guardian Angels Medical Service Dogs, where they breed, raise, and train and place these companion working dogs with people who need them, and all for no cost. We both believe that all dogs can be good dogs, but that dog training starts with people training. And the better you understand your dog, the better you can communicate with them and make them the best canine citizens they can be. This is not specifically a training show. It's also understanding dogs from the outside in, how to read their body language and what they're telling you, and from the inside out, to know that each dog's an individual and needs to be seen as such and lived with alongside us with joy and compassion. I am back with Stephanie Russo, whose wonderful book, How to Raise a Puppy, A Dog-Centric Approach, co-written with Turid Rugas, has so much great advice in it, not just for puppies, but for dogs of any age. And what I'd like to talk to you about, Steph, is equipment, because many of the pieces of equipment that are considered okay or good or neutral in America, maybe in the UK, you're in Dublin, where you're a very sought-after dog trainer, are actually on your no-go list. And the first one that surprised me the most was anti-pull harnesses. Can you talk about how we go wrong in how we choose a harness and why we're misguided in what we're buying?
Sure, and I'm so glad you asked me that, because anti-pull harnesses are really popular. People often think that they're going to stop the dog from pulling, and they're a harness, so they're better than a collar. But if you think about it, if you've got a dog who's pulling, if you're going to use equipment to stop the pulling, there's only two ways of doing that. And one is that the equipment will cause pain and that the dog won't pull to avoid the pain. Or the other option is that you pull their body so much out of alignment that they can't pull. So most of the anti-pull harnesses, all of the anti-pull harnesses that I've ever seen, will rely on one or other of those. So a really popular kind of anti-pull harness, I actually don't see them so much here. I used to see them a lot in the UK, where these ones that looked really benign, but they went right up under the dog's armpit. That's where it tightened. It was like a slip lead, but it was around just under the dog's armpits. So if the dog pulled, they got squeezed under the armpits. So that's obviously working on that pain premise that it's painful if you pull and then something digs into your armpits. So the idea is that the dog won't pull to avoid the pain. And the other type that are very popular that rely on the other mechanism are the front clip harnesses. Because if you clip the dog to the front, when the dog pulls, his body is pulled to the side. And that, if he's always doing that, if he's being pulled to the side like that all the time, over time, he's going to end up with pain in his shoulders and his back and probably his neck. So the mechanism is that he can't have the power if he keeps turning to the side when he pulls. But the consequence of that in the long term is that you've got a dog whose body is being constantly pulled out of alignment. And the problem with any of these approaches to stopping pulling is something that's become apparent to me down through the years, is that pulling is generally not actually a training issue. It's not that the dog is deciding to pull and we've got to get them not to do it. Very often the dog is pulling in response to their emotional condition. So either they're overstimulated and they're overexcited, or they're a bit stressed, or they're tired, and it's sort of easier almost to fall into their equipment than to not pull when they're tired. And a lot of the time, if you can take away, I'm going to use that word stressor as in the scientific sense, not necessarily negative stress, but anything that's causing that arousal in the dog. If you can take away the stressor, the dog will often naturally slow down and stop pulling. If you are kind of quite relaxed and walking slowly yourself, this was 2 years ago now, we adopted a collie who'd had a very sort of traumatic background, and we live kind of suburbanly, so that was a change for her as well. But what I noticed with her was she was pulling like a train during the day, but when I took her out at night, when there wasn't the same amount of sort of visual stimulation, she relaxed and stopped pulling.
How interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's really interesting.
Wanda pulls as though she were bred and born to be a sled dog when I put a harness on. It's the most peculiar thing, and part of me wonders, harnesses were originally equipment for whether it was cart dogs like a Bernese Mountain Dog or a dog, a Bouvier de Flandre, or a Husky, some kind of Alaskan Malamute type of dog. The harness was put on, and the dog's immediate reaction was to pull with it, against it. I mean, that whole structure on a dog's body seemed to invite the dog to move forward with force. So it always struck me as a little bit odd to put it on a dog for walking in a dog park or in a city. But I got it for Wanda because when a leash goes on her, she also thinks she's supposed to pull. I think it's the very thing you're talking about. It's some arousal issue. But harness just, I mean, she could clearly pull a small Volkswagen. When you put the harness on, she's like, I'll pull anything you want. Oh, well, never mind that it's you. Yeah. And I did get one that I thought, oh, this is clever. It clips in the front on the chest and on the back at the withers. But that pulls her out of alignment in two different directions and does not stop her from pulling. And by the way, it's under her armpits as well. So, this is most confusing. I've clearly made not the world's best decision, and it hasn't solved the problem at all. Now, if I really wanted to solve it, I'd move to Dublin, or at least temporarily. I'd come and take some classes with you, and we'd practice leash walking. But since it's it's a free-roaming dog. We don't do leashes, except for in very rare cases. So I am completely disinterested in teaching a dog to walk politely on a leash because that's not the lifestyle we have. If we did have that lifestyle, I would never have let it get to this point. But part of it is that, you know, it's totally once a month does a harness go on her. It's like, what is this thing? It's very odd for her. So there's that.
And that makes sense. If you don't need them to do it, why would you teach them to do it? But just two things that you said there. I actually, personally, I know nothing about sled dogs, but I remember Turid actually saying when I was doing her course that the harnesses don't get the sled dogs to pull, that they actually have to learn to pull.
Really?
Yes. Now, as I say, personally, I don't know anything about it, but that is something that Turid said.
She would know. She's in Norway, which is a huge country for winter sports with dogs. In the Dog Film Festival, I've had a number of films over the years that were about winter sports and even summer sports with dogs and people, cajoling and things that involve bicycles and skis and sleds and all kinds of things, you know, one man, two man, three dogs. And I just thought those dogs had it in their DNA. Hook me up, beam me up, Scotty, and I will just go. So that's interesting that they need to be taught it. Unfortunately, our pet dogs don't need to be taught it. They need to be untaught it. So what do we do about that? Well, I mean, one thing is don't use an anti-pull harness, which clearly doesn't keep you from pulling.
And you know what I've done? And it hasn't happened every time, but I have had at least two or three clients down through the years who called me for the sole reason that their dog was pulling like a train. And all I did was put the dog in a comfortable harness and a longer lead, and the pulling stopped.
No kidding.
Because again, if you're not comfortable and you're a dog, and you kind of want to get out of that equipment, that in itself is going to be stressful. But often they pull in response to the discomfort.
That's a brilliant idea.
So that's all I had. Now, there's been plenty of occasions when I've gone to see dogs who are pulling and we needed to do more than that. But the first thing I always try is putting them in a harness that's what's the word? Ergonomic? Is that the word?
Ergonomic, yeah. For sure that's the word. And I've seen a lot of those. They kind of look like a little bit of a, not a compression garment, but it's got a whole little structure over their shoulders.
And what you want, what Turid always says, you want as little as possible. The brand, am I allowed to mention a brand?
Yes, please. I would love to know a brand. I hope it's sold in America. I'll be buying one tomorrow.
Well, I know someone who sells them in Canada, so I'm sure they could ship down. But the brand of harness that I have found to be the best of any that I have ever tried are the Hakihana ones. They're an Italian brand and they're handmade.
Oh, my.
And that's a female-owned company as well.
Oh, I love that. Hakihana. How do we spell Hakihana?
H-A-Q-Y-H-A-N-A. But what they've got, and what I do for my puppy classes, I buy in lots of these harnesses and I lend them out to people while they're in puppy class so they don't have to buy one that their puppy's going to grow out of.
Aren't you kind?
The size that I always get the long fitting ones. They have a standard fit and they have a long fit, and they also have a kind of a double harness for escape artists or greyhounds.
Oh, that's funny.
But that long fitting harness is really good because it some dogs do need the standard one, especially some of the kind of like the Frenchies or the pugs, the dogs that are quite short in the body.
Right.
But most dogs, the long fit is really good and it stops you getting any of that riding up behind the armpits. It gives them a good hands space behind the armpits. So when they're moving.
I say good for the Italians for having solved this. They make the world's most beautiful cars and it turns out they make the world's most ergonomically correct and comfortable harness. Definitely getting one for Wanda. For some reason, Maisie doesn't pull at all, but I just suddenly realized when you said that it was a light bulb moment. If the harness, when you clip it on and snap it on, pinches and pulls, the first reaction you're going to have is, let's get out of here.
Yeah.
Let's run away from this thing. It just never even crossed my mind. Now, another thing that you talk about in how to raise a puppy is head halters. Halty is one brand, but there's several others. Gentle Leader. And I've had many versions of them. And I remember, because this is, again, that sort of Victorian, old-fashioned thinking, oh, the dog will just have to get used to it. I worked with a trainer who I adored, and she was really compassionate. But we both came from the horse world, where a band over the nose of a horse, the noseband, is a really essential part of whether it's a halter or a bridle or almost any piece of equipment that you control a horse with. Not necessarily that it has a lot of pressure on it, though if you attach a martingale underneath it, it has a lot of pressure on it. And the dog would fight and claw. And if the dog has dew claws, you think they're going to harm their eyeballs. They just can't wait to get it off. Can you talk a little bit about the misguided thinking that we should put a piece of equipment on our dogs that makes them that miserable? How could they possibly concentrate on training?
Yeah, and I suppose the thing is in that sort of, I suppose, all a bit like the anti-pull harnesses, the dog never learns anything in it because it's just an aversive. It's just something that the dog finds incredibly unpleasant. And I suppose some of the issues with those is, I mean, there's so many issues with those. I think I hate those even more than I hate standard collars.
Yes.
But the dog can put his head down to sniff, and sniffing is such a key part of any walk for the dog. If they do pull, again, you can see their little poor little heads and necks being yanked to the side, which, I mean, one hard yank like that would be enough to give them whiplash. But over time, all of those little micro yanks to the side are going to leave their poor little necks in a terrible state.
Definitely and be then, a candidate for the chiropractor.
Absolutely, sort of canine.
All right, so say about standard halter, standard collars. When you say I hate the head halters more than standard ones. Standard ones, you mean just a flat buckle collar?
Yeah.
All right, tell us why.
Well, I suppose, again, we're just talking about that really sensitive piece of anatomy. Why my pet hate, actually, is when you see young kids, often with puppies, on flat collars and leads, and they're running along together, and suddenly the child stops, and you see that poor puppy get to the end
of that
collar and the poor little neck. But one of our colleagues in the Netherlands, Belgium, Els Witz is her name. She used to be a physiotherapist for humans and an osteopath. And she's put together some really interesting stuff on this, on the anatomy of a dog's neck and how it's pretty much identical to our own necks. All that sort of quite quite important anatomy that's in there. And the fact that the neck is largely quite unprotected. It's mainly soft tissue. So she talks about all the different parts of anatomy within the neck that can be damaged by a standard collar, the different bones for the cervical spine, the trachea, the larynx, the tongue bone. There's so much anatomy in there that can be damaged by the dog pulling. And even if the person never jerks the dog, because a lot of people say, "Oh, well, my dog doesn't pull. I don't yank the dog, so I'm fine with a flat collar." But sure, how many of us have seen, you know, our dog see a cat and lunge off?
Yes, totally.
Or mm-hmm. a car backfires and they get a fright and they lunge. Any of those things are going to be causing damage to the neck. And when I see those children with the puppies on the leads, I think to myself, would you give your older child a lead attached to the neck of your younger child and let them run around together?
That's exactly right, because that is what you're doing. And then there's still the training that says the way you teach your dog to heel or to stand or to walk near you is you snap the collar. So you're taught to jerk them hard. Oh, and then let go and do let go. Yeah. But meanwhile, you've given them whiplash. So you're jerking them, causing pain and really seriously, eventually damage, whether it comes out in the dog developing arthritis or being tender and sore. You know, they can't tell us and they don't tell us. These are all such important pieces of information. All right, just to wrap it up, Steph Russo, what do we have? Simply a collar for identification on the dog and never attach a leash to it and just get this wonderful Hakuhana harness and make Italy, help Italy's economy all in one go?
And I'm sure there are other brands, but that is the brand that I have found, even with harnesses that look similar. None of them fit as well as that. But yes, I would use a nice soft collar for identification purposes. And then the only thing I would be attaching a lead to is the nice, well-fitting harness.
Excellent. All right. We all know now what to get ourselves for our next birthday or our dog's next birthday, if not sooner. Thank you so much for this wonderful advice from How to Raise a Puppy, a Dog-Centric Approach. Thanks, Steph Russo.
Thanks, Tracy.